I personally just hope like the game feel is a little bit better. Like this isn't a broader sentiment, but I've always found them very clunky games to play. Like the movement of the character just kind of feels awkward. I don't think the shooting ever feels all that tight. I would love for that just to sharpen up.
I feel like with Rockstar games as well, like it's always, I feel like the animation is driving the character more than the buttons I'm pressing, if that makes
100%.
Sense. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're
sprinting, that's a perfect way to describe it. Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast, the Press Start Australia weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm out of practice, it's been too long. I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Shannon.
Hello, bring Bodie back as host.
Bring Bodie back. And James.
Hello.
I love how you came to savage me and messed it up at the same time. This week we'll be discussing the big reveal around Grand Theft Auto 6. Xbox kind of crushing it at the moment, and the Borderlands 4 deep dive. I'm curious to see if that took either of your interest. But first, it is good to be back in the hosting chair. It does feel like it's been a little while. Brody's been pulling more than his fair share of hosting duties in the past month or so, which is not knocking him. I think he's done a great job, and I'm really excited to hear for everyone to hear the bonus episode that you recorded, James, which we can't really say too much about in this episode, but you'll very quickly find out after the release of this episode what that bonus episode is. That's just like cryptic as I think I can be about
what
it.
Game it is,
I
think, right? It's not that.
Can you?
It's probably more exciting not to say it at this point.
Yeah, who knows? You all just have to. We're not going to say it's.
Well, you can reveal if you like, James, what the talk is, and to look out for the bonus episode.
It's very mysterious. Very enigmatic. So we'll just wait and see.
Well, speaking of spoiling surprises, I did spoil the surprise at the start of this show that I made a little bit of a purchase in the week. I think it was maybe a fortnight ago we talked about EB kind of having retro releases available on the store. I decided to partake in that, and YouTube viewers of the podcast will see what I'm holding in my hands now. That is the entire trilogy of the Resistance games released on the PS3. I dug out my my PS3 and I've got it set up on the monitor beside me here. And I'm playing Resistance Fall of Man for the first time, in amongst a few other things, which I would love to talk about more. But Shannon, I'm struggling a little bit with Resistance Fall of Man. It kind of shows its age a little bit, I think.
I feel like, that age of PS3 game, like people are always saying, oh, it looks like a PS2 game, but like anything PS3 and older, like does look rough.
It was launch, wasn't it?
It was a launch game, I think. Yeah. Thereabouts.
Because it's in that weird era of game where it's not really like retro nostalgic, but like it's not modern in terms of how it plays. So like it's stuck in a weird spot. The story's cool though, and you can see the Insomniac flair in it, surely.
For sure, particularly in like the weapon design. I think that's where like the Insomniac nature of it really comes through. Less so in the story. I'm not finding the story or the characters particularly. The story maybe, the world building is kind of cool, but here we
two
are.
Two and three are definitely better.
Resistance two like is, 20 two years after the fact.
Yeah.
How long do you think Fall of Man is? Do I just power through it?
It's like 6 hours. It's
okay.
Not long.
$8 worth, that. Ewan.
Yeah.
It did only cost $8. It was pretty good going. All right. We should really get stuck into today's news topics because there is plenty to discuss. Let's kick things off with Grand Theft Auto 6. A release date for the game has finally been revealed as May 26, 2026, which does push it into next year and out of 2025. Not great for my fantasy critic submissions, but that aside, Shannon, first to you, what do you make of Grand Theft Auto finally getting a release date and it not being this year?
Yeah, like we'd obviously spoken at length about how it could be pushed into next year. And like I think that was a strong possibility. I was a little bit shocked to see them date it May 26, 2026. Like I thought we were more talking Jan-Feb. If it slipped, but obviously they just wanted to set a date and then wanted to set something that they didn't have to move again. So, in true minds, like I wasn't as bothered about it until I actually saw more of the game yesterday, which I know we'll talk about in a second. And then I was like, oh, I really would like this sooner. And I feel like this was meant to be the beat where they announced the release date for later this year. So it does sting a little bit knowing how far it is. But there's a good amount of exciting stuff still this year.
Yeah, that deeper dive you alluded to there was a story trailer they put out, which maybe softened the blow a little bit, maybe made it a little bit harder to wait. But it's the best look we've had of the game's characters, its setting so far. And it came alongside a big kind of info dump on their website as well, which featured over 70 new screenshots, kind of showing more glimpses of the characters, the world, that kind of thing. James, what about you? Did the trailer kind of leave you a little disappointed the game wasn't coming out later this year?
Not really. I play, like there's other games, right? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like,
yeah.
I know that, like, obviously I'm in stark opposition to what Shannon thinks, but, like, I just think there's so many other cooler games. Not, I don't want to say cooler games, but so many other games that I am keen to play. I'm still behind on stuff at the beginning of the year because I was away.
Yeah, so.
So, like, I am happy to, like, not have it this year. It wasn't like the central event around my life this year, right? So
yeah,
I think some amazing games still coming that I can still enjoy. Yeah,
I think similarly, I'm kind of breathing a little bit of a sigh and relief in that it just kind of one less game to have to worry about making time for this year. Like, already kind of Clair Obscur is like glaring at me from my backlog. And
same.
There's probably another couple not coming to mind that I'd like to get to at some point too. And yeah, like, as we'll touch on throughout the episode, there are still plenty of games coming out this year that I'm eager to spend some time with. So yeah, as far as the story trailer goes, though, I think I'm as excited for this game as ever. Like, it, I think the setting's really cool. It seems to me that they have kind of developed, I think, the kind of themes of the game a little bit. We've spoken about this on the podcast before. Like, what more can you really sort of do with, like, satire of American society at this point in time? But I forget just how much time has passed since GTA 5 has come out, and I feel like they're bringing in a lot of what has happened in the near 10 years between these, well, over 10 years between these games initially coming out. I think the two characters are kind of interesting. I'm curious to see how that sort of relationship plays out. And the kind of setting as well. Like, there's so much variety to the locations that they showed off in the trailer. Yeah. And it's all very Florida. Like, you've kind of got the beaches and the swamps and the kind of like more kind of resorty sort of side of town. All of that seems to be coming through, I'm really curious to see how it all comes together and what the map looks like as in one piece. But as excited for the game as I could be, I think. You much the same, Shannon?
Yeah, I am. I am surprised. I love how, like, their marketing strategy for this ended up being, like, the total opposite to what they said they were going to do in terms of, like, it's a year away, which, like, never happens in gaming. But, yeah, I'm hugely excited for it. I understand what you're both saying in the sense of, like, there's a lot of games this year. But I just think there's nothing like Grand Theft Auto, and we've been waiting so long. Like, it's going to be 13 or 14 years by the time it comes out.
Yeah.
And it's just such a long time. But yeah, I'm hugely excited. Like, the game looks phenomenal, like, not just in fidelity, but just, like, the amount of personality and detail in, like, every single of the screenshot on the website. The locations all look really diverse. It just, again, is uniquely GTA, which, yeah, we don't know how that's going to play out in the final game, but I'm pretty confident, and they are confident too, I think.
It is almost like more movie-esque, isn't it? The kind of, like, announcing a year in advance, the release date a year in advance. Oh, hang on, I just got a note. We've lost James.
He's here. Oh.
Okay, it said you to stop recording for a moment. Hopefully that's all. Oh, no, he's gone. I knew something was up. I was like, there's something going wrong here. We can continue, Shannon. I feel like it's more of like a movie-esque release, right? Like, it's kind of being announced a year ahead of time. It feels more like Disney kind of Marvel-esque. Do you think they kind of maintain the hype and excitement for another year?
I think so, just because there's nothing else that could come and take the thunder. And I think this, the delay and then this massive drop of information and just how they totally took over, like, every news cycle. Like, so many people that would never post about games on the Instagram story that I know, like, were posting the GTA trailer. Like, there's nothing else like it. 60
million views already, and it's been, like, less than a day. So, like, I mean, it's one of those brands that I feel like transcends, like, us.
I don't know. I don't really know the pre-order, like, what happens with pre-orders and stuff at the moment. I know there's, like, laws and stuff in different countries, but I am kind of surprised, like, they wouldn't just drop it for pre-order at some point, because I feel like they could bring in so much money, like, just from pre-orders and just, in the year ahead. So I will be interested to see what they do there with additions and special edition consoles and controllers. Like, I think this now gives them room to just do a bunch of other stuff around the release and make more money.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think they could, now that it's out there, they've kind of detailed an awful lot of it. Like, they can really just kind of plan out those marketing beats, and, like, maybe a pre-order date comes down the horizon. There's an event around that.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what they do up in the build-up to launch as well. Like, presumably, they kind of go all out around the marketing of the game. I mean, not that they particularly need to, but it could be this really big cultural event, right? Like, you know, we've been talking a lot about the Nintendo Switch 2 release this year and the impact that's going to have. Like, I think the release of this one game rivals that, right, in terms of its size. So,
yeah. I respect them, because, like, I know that they would have really wanted it to come out this holiday, and obviously I think the game being good is probably the most important thing for them. So, yeah, I'm glad they've given it the time.
Yeah, an interesting tidbit to this. Like, I had money on it, not literally, but in terms of Fantasy Critic, coming out this year, because they had had on a couple of occasions, like, the opportunity to back out of it, but they doubled down and talked about it coming out this year, and they were fronting board meetings saying all that. And that has translated into a financial impact for Take-Two. Like, I think their share value dropped 8 to 10%, something like that, in the wake of the release date shifting. So, yeah, it has, like, a tangible impact on the company. So, to your point, Shannon, it is kind of good that we're going to take the time to make sure we get it right rather than rush it out this financial year and appease our shareholders.
I feel like it's the kind of thing where they could have probably made this year, like, if they really wanted to and crunched, and, like, it probably would have had some bugs and whatever. But I think, they probably are at a point where it's like, we need to delay it now or not.
They got a lot of blowback for the crunch around Red Dead Redemption 2 as well, right? And rightfully so. So maybe they're trying to avoid that this time.
Yeah, it's going to come, like, quite late in the console life cycle as well, which is, crazy to think.
Have they said anything about it coming to the Switch 2? Did I miss that?
Just no. Like a console. Well, I was going to say.
Not even PC, so.
Yeah. Just Xbox and PS5 for the moment. Series S?
It said Series S on there.
It did.
So,
did it?
And if it's coming to Series S, probably coming to Switch 2. Like, I feel like that's...
Yeah, you'd have to imagine, right? Eventually. Right. Yeah. Wild.
I think, like...
And no doubt PC a year later, and they can sell the copy, another copy to everyone. Or later.
I think it looks good. Like, I'm not normally one to be like the last game, I didn't really look at the trailers and get excited, but I think the dynamic of having, like, two characters in love and stuff is, like, kind of, I think it's very different. It obviously is very different for what the series has done before. And you can just see it's going to be dysfunctional, and there's going to be, like, people who are like, they're just like us, like the Harley Quinn people, like, you know, like all those. It's like, no, it's toxic. Like, that's not what you're meant to be. But so I think, like, the vibes in the world and the characters, like, it looks really good. I'm still, like, really interested to know how the gameplay changes, because I feel like with 5, right, like, the difference there was three characters switch between them all the time, come together for the heists, whatever, and I feel like that was quite different for the time. But I do wonder if there's going to be much more to this than it's just a new game with a really shiny, really, really shiny and impressive coat of paint. But is it just that?
I don't think from a gameplay point of view, it will be that different, like, mechanically, just because I don't know how they... I think it'll be, like, the world, like, and that will be really be evolving and changing and dynamic.
Do you remember, like, we used to say, like, we thought maybe you could go into all the buildings now or something? Like, there would be an element to that. But looking at how big this area is that they've shown off, like, I don't know if that's the case anymore. Like, not that we ever thought that was ever confirmed, but I do wonder.
It's also, like, people say that, but why would you want to do that in reality?
I agree, but... For GTA Online, I feel like that could have some really cool gameplay implications.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like story-wise, maybe not.
I personally just hope, like, the game feel is a little bit better. Like, I'm surprised this isn't a broader sentiment, but I've always found them very clunky games to play. Like, the movement of the character just kind of feels awkward. I don't think the shooting ever feels all that tight. I would love for that just to sharpen up.
I feel like with Rockstar games as well, like, it's always... I feel like the animation is driving the character more than the buttons I'm pressing, if that makes
100%.
Sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're sprinting,
that's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I kind of hope that changes. But then I don't think Red Dead 2 was any different, so I don't really know if
it
this
wasn't,
is going
no.
to be. So, I think that's just a rage, if that's still what they're using.
Yeah. I do feel like there's probably a camp of people that that's kind of the appeal of the game, is the awkward kind of physics of it a little
bit. It's like
you're
running through maple syrup. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's literally
it's
it.
It's so weird
yeah.
because, like, when you play, this is so different, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, like, Rockstar Table Tennis, that game was, like, tight as fuck. Like, I don't... so they can do it and, you know...
Yeah.
But, yeah. Who knows?
No, it does feel like more the MO of the games, but it's just like a personal pet peeve of mine. I'm glad you two agree. I wasn't sure if that was going to be received all that well.
No, I agree.
Yeah, dead excited for it. May next year coincides. It'll come a week after my 30th birthday, planning to spend most of that following weekend, I think, just sinking time into Grand Theft Auto 6. That'll be
very
a lot of
dynamic.
Fun. Let's talk about Xbox now, though. And there's a fair few bits of Xbox news I want to get through, so kind of bear with me. This might be a bit awkwardly structured. But let's start with the reveal of Gears of War Reloaded, a remaster of the original game that's coming to Xbox Series S and X, PS5, and PC on August 26th. The game will run at 4K 60 in the campaign and 120 frames in multiplayer, and it's going to include all the DLC and multiplayer modes as well. Which of the two of you is, like, a bigger Gears of War fan, do you think?
I would, I don't know, but I mean,
I would say James is a bigger fan of, I mean, Gears is, like, one of the only franchises where I've actually played all of them.
Oh, okay.
Through.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know if I could tell you anything about them, about any of them, but yeah, it's a great series.
Given it is, like, typically it up until now has been an Xbox franchise and you're more of a PlayStation player, that does surprise me. James, maybe to you then, like, how big a deal is this for PlayStation owners, would you say?
I think it's good. Like, I mean, the writing's on the wall, like, for Xbox in terms of the exclusivity stuff, right? But I think I have, like, really fond nostalgia for this game, even though I think the aesthetic is, like, gross. But I just think the game itself is really fun. The online multiplayer is really good. The maps are incredible. Like, I just have a lot of good memories of Gears 1 and 2. So to have them kind of juice it up is, like, cool. I do think, like, this is the third time now they've released Gears of War 1. Like, I don't know. But it doesn't magically become, like, a better game or something to be excited about just because it's on PS5 for me. But I think, like, I think if Microsoft's going to do this, the way that they're doing it, full cross-play, full cross-progression, like, all of that is really good. Like, I think the only other publisher that's even remotely doing something like that is Ubisoft, with their single-player games, right? So, yeah, like, I think it's good. I don't know, like, does this open the door for other games to happen? Like, I know, obviously, what I mean is like, do they see a point in doing 2 and 3 now? Like, I don't know, because it feels like they are.
Well, the rumor was trilogy, so I don't know why
so
this,
like,
is this.
Because I don't see it being feasible for them, especially, like, Gears 3, where there's not as much, like, nostalgia for it. Like,
and this already had, like, a remaster, right? Where I don't think 2 and 3 have ever had, like, that remaster treatment.
I think that's correct from memory.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see them doing it if it does really, really well. But, I mean, like, you probably only need this one for E-Day. right? I feel like will come to PS5.
I also think this is a game that's not... I don't think there's... I could be wrong now that I'm saying it out loud, but I feel like there's not many games on PlayStation that are like this. Like, it kind of does fill a gap in, like, their catalog.
Well, there's not many games, period, like this.
Not many games.
When you say like games like this, do you mean like a cover-based shooter? Yeah.
Like a third-person like cover-based shooter. But that's so different.
Yeah,
but it's also a very different game. And also, like, because this is a game from 360, when games were, like, more feature complete at launch, like, this has, like, full co-op, full multiplayer, you know, and a full campaign with a pretty good production values, even though the story is, like, whatever. So I feel like, yeah, I don't know, like, I think it's a good game to have in your library if you are someone on PlayStation who's never played it before.
Yeah, I see this kind of being a game that, like, me and, you know, my mate Daniel or whatever, we play a bit of co-op games together, might just kind of try and rattle through in a weekend or something like
that. It's very good, and the campaign is very well-paced. It's, like, one of the best. So I think, yeah, you should definitely try it. Like, I think it stands up pretty well today.
It was that went against Resistance head-to-head, so you can play Resistance and maybe not the remake version of this, but go back and play the original and then make your mind up.
They're both just kind of like brown and colorless, aren't they?
There's like flourishes of red in this.
Red,
okay, the blood spurts.
There was nothing like
touching on the next bit of Xbox news then. Industry analyst Matt Piscatella reported that US retail data shows that the remaster of Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion is the third best-selling game of this year. I think the two beating it were Monster Hunter Wilds and Assassin's Creed Shadows. I think they were the top two. Given its surprise release, Shannon, are you surprised with how well the game's done?
No, I feel like it's that perfect storm of, like, Oblivion has nostalgia for a lot of people. Like, obviously, Elder Scrolls, there's been nothing since Skyrim, apart from online. Yeah. And I don't think there was too much happening.
A long time away.
Yeah, when it dropped. And it just, lots of positive sentiment around it. So, doesn't surprise me at all. It's a massive franchise. I think the way it all happened was probably perfect in how it leaked and whatever else.
Yeah. Interesting to note as well that Clair Obscur doesn't seem to have been too negatively impacted by this kind of dropping on top of it, which was a concern. I think we spoke about it, plenty of others did too. But I think they announced that they've had 2.5 million people play the game. And similarly, pleased to see that South of Midnight has had 1 million people play that game as well. These kind of Xbox Game Pass releases seem to be, not that it's just available there, but seem to be doing pretty well. Are you kind of surprised at any of this data, James, or does it kind of similar to Shannon, not surprised all that much?
I don't think it's surprising. Like, I think Oblivion was the game that really put Bethesda, like, on the map with the console audience. Like, I know everyone loves Morrowind, right? But I feel like a lot of people played Oblivion first. And I think with Microsoft, in terms of Game Pass, like, they kind of get both now. Do you know what I mean? They get all that Game Pass subscriber money, and then they get this other big fat injection from people just buying it on PS5. Like, they really are probably doing best from this now.
That teased me up nicely for the next point I had, but you can carry on if you want, James.
I was just going to say, Clair Obscur getting like 2 million players in like a week or something is also quite... And that's 2 million sold, I think. That's not even including Game Pass numbers. So it's even probably better than that. I think that's great. South of Midnight, like 1 million doesn't sound like a lot, but I think for Compulsion, that is pretty solid considering how we've Happy Few. I'd have to double check. And Contrast, I can't imagine, did numbers, but I could be wrong.
I think Clair Obscur has really benefited quite well from the reviews that it got, obviously. Like, I think it's one of these games in which people have kind of woken up and paid more attention to it, given like how well it's been received critically. I'd maybe put Blueprints into the same sort of category this year. South of Midnight, I sort of feel like that could gain traction over time. Like, I'm still playing a bit of South of Midnight. I'm yet to finish it, but I think it's a really cool world and story, and it's kind of got the gameplay mechanics speak to me as well. I feel like that is just going to be the game that people kind of gradually find in Game Pass over time.
I think that's the thing with Game Pass as well, is like, so with Oblivion and Clair Obscur, like, I can't play both right now, so I just have to play one and just come back to it later. Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess that's probably a strategy to keep you subbed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Atomfall is like another one I want to get back to at some point. Yeah, well, there's too many.
Avowed.
Avowed, yeah.
I feel like for a game like South of Midnight, though, I don't think it's doing anything for Xbox or Game Pass.
But I also don't think it costs them anything compared to, say,
low money, yeah. Low return, I guess.
I do just question the strategy and like how many of these have like come out one after the other. I feel like you could have just added an extra month in between these releases just to spread it out a little bit.
Or just market them in any capacity. I feel like there's like no marketing for any of them.
I just worry that Xbox suddenly have a quiet year next year.
I think they're going to have a quiet year.
And it's why did you put so many games out this year?
What about this year?
I feel their showcase is going to be massive, because why are you like just dropping Oblivion and Gears on random Tuesdays when the showcase is like 3 weeks away?
Like Oblivion, you could have just kept that up your sleeve and just like, oh, it's been a couple of months since we put out a new game, like here's Oblivion.
I think the sleeves were a bit loose though. I think that was the problem. Very wide.
True. Yeah. Sleeves. Yeah. There's a lot. Everyone was looking up their sleeves. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was that whole thing was odd. But yeah.
Well, it seems to be working pretty well for Microsoft. Their CEO revealed in an earnings call this past week that the company has had the most pre-orders and pre-installs on the PlayStation Store in the first 3 months of this year. So just to put that, like, rephrase that, they have been the most successful publisher, I think it's fair to say, on PlayStation in the first 3 months of 2025. Shannon, like, what sort of weird universe have we fallen into that this is now our reality?
Yeah, I know. I feel like we had said this was going to have to be their strategy, and it very much is their strategy, and it's paying off. I think Microsoft need every dollar they're getting from their Xbox division. I think they know that they've spent literally billions and billions of dollars, and now they just need to extract as much as possible out of that, and it seems to be working for them. And I think the Switch 2 will be next, in the sense of, like, we'll just see all of these games come to Switch 2, and it'll feel like we're having this same conversation again for the next 6 months, because the money on those platforms is just, there for them to take. With the games that are great, it's just their platform just hasn't grown in the way that they've wanted over the last few years. And it's, a big deal. Like, watching Forza have its moment, like, 4 or 5 years after release again, and Gears 20 years after its release, and whatever else is happening, is going to be just huge for Xbox on these new platforms.
Mm. I still, I'm gradually becoming more used to it, and I still, like, I'm gravitating towards my PC more and more because I've got Game Pass on there and I can play games there.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's kind of like the draw. It's like, okay, I can pay the membership price for Xbox and get access to all these games and play on an ecosystem that suits them, or I can fork out $80 and $100 or whatever and play the game on PlayStation. Compelling offer.
Not to be a negative person, but and I know this sort of is your next question, so I'm just going to jump straight to it. With hardware, it's going to put them in an awkward spot, because why would you buy an Xbox the next gen over a PS5 or like a Switch 2? Like, if you're someone that was going to buy an Xbox first, which probably wasn't that many people to begin with, like, it'd be even less going to the next gen, just because why would you be compelled to if everything you can play on PC or PS5 or Switch 2? So I think the long game for them is still unclear, and I'm sure they're working it out, but I think this is their only play and it's working out in terms of money for them.
Just to bring that news into it, so Xbox announced in the week saw that they're raising prices of the Xbox Series X and S and all their accessories and games, also getting a price release. I actually don't have those prices in front of me, but it was not an insignificant price increase. I think it was like kind of $50 to $100.
It's worse in the US, right? Where it's like it's a pricey console in the US now, comparatively.
So yeah, I guess that kind of touches on what you were saying there, Shannon, is how do they kind of justify owning Xbox hardware over where else you can play it. My and sort of gut feel is that, like, if I'm playing on PC, but the price of entry on PC is rather high, particularly to rival a current generation console. So suddenly the Xbox Series X looks pretty appealing, even at this current or this increased price. If, and I stress if, playing games like natively, like rendered on the machine matters to you. If you're pretty content, like streaming it or, I know, playing it on kind of a lower spec sort of thing, then maybe there's other options for you. And that's assuming you don't want to pay like the price of every game that you might have on a PlayStation, right? And then you get the best of both worlds.
I do think leaning into the PC might be their best option, and it does sound like that's what they're doing with their next console and the handheld that's going to be released in the coming weeks that we now know is the Asus ROG Ally 2, essentially just rebranded. Like, I do think that puts them in a position where you can own an Xbox, but it's a PC and you can also play all the PC games on it from everything, and that's a different strategy than Xbox, than PlayStation and Nintendo. So I do like that strategy for them. I just think with hardware, they're not going to be able to take a loss on hardware now, because they're probably just not going to make it back on software. So, like, they're going to have to really, think about what their hardware strategy is and evolve that accordingly.
Yeah. James, you look deep in thought. What's going on in that head of yours?
He's worried.
I was actually reading the prices. The Australian, like, so it's gone up by $50.
Oh, can you remind? Yeah, $50.
Yeah, so like the Series X goes up to $849 from $799, which I think is the same increase here as PlayStation 5 went up, right?
Yeah, I think virtually. Yeah.
I think it's more. I think it's like $20 more than the PS5 here, which is whatever.
Yeah. But then in America, it's like almost $950 for like a Series X, which like is just fucked. Like, that is so like beyond. I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm assuming it's a tariff related thing or something, right? But
What you wrought, an American company manufacturing their goods overseas, trying to get them back in the country. Make Xboxes in America, I guess. That's the
what Shannon was saying. It is interesting hardware wise. Like, what are they going to do? Like, even right now, so many games that are coming out on everything, they play better on PS5 Pro. And it's like, you know, for like the first 4 years of the cycle, they were going on about how Series X is the most powerful console ever, and now it's like even their games don't run better than other stuff on PS5 Pro. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I think they've been in a worse spot. I think they're
Xbox One like was very much like it felt like the Wii U, like where you're just like waiting for that like hit and it just never came.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up as potentially like a Sega type situation, and I don't know if that's a bad thing.
I mean, we've talked at length about how no competition hasn't helped other aspects, right? Like, so
yeah,
I think it is bad in the big scheme of
things. I think the Xbox brand is like regaining strength. Like, I think people are paying more attention to Xbox games now. And so I think like their move as a publisher is probably working in their favor. But yeah, the hardware side of things, I just don't think anyone's excited about owning an Xbox, but they are excited about playing their games. But how much of that is down to their acquisitions?
If you're new to the market too, and which I think a lot of people will be, say if they're going to pick up GTA 6, like, and they're going to weigh it all up. They're going to be like, well, you know, like, which should I go for? And I don't know, the value proposition is quite tough.
But I guess they'll just play Fortnite instead on their iPad.
Yeah, you're right. I think, like, they've all, I mean, besides Nintendo, I do think maybe Sony and Xbox have kind of stopped trying to, like, grow the install base and just, like, get more money out of the people who are already in. I think that is definitely like a shift that they're both making.
Well, I just think realistically the gaming segment probably isn't growing.
Well, it's never going to reach that way from like 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Unless happens again.
I think we'll get to those levels again, but I think like COVID was this kind of momentary spike, but I think like it'll drop down and then just kind of gradually kind of grow back up to that set of player base. Like, I feel like there's a kind of a bit of an age ceiling in which people are like regular gamers, right? But as kind of demographics change, like everyone kind of growing up now, becoming a teenager or whatever, like wants a console or wants to play video games, right? Like I think that's more and more common. I
think GTA will be a big moment to bring new people in terms of like just that 16-year-old that probably isn't even thinking about owning a console and like wants to play GTA just because their friends are all talking about it. Like I know how that was. Like when San Andreas came out, like it was just a massive moment. So I do think that and the Switch 2, like will naturally just bring people in and we'll see some shifts. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Okay, we're really discovering a full breadth or discussing a full breadth of topics now. I do just have one more I want to get to before we head into what the wiki, and that is Borderlands 4. It was revealed that the game is no longer releasing on December 23rd and now has an earlier release date of December 12th. At the time, a lot of us thought, hey, maybe this is making way for GTA 6. Was not the case. A deep dive on the game in the past week also showed off much more of the game's characters, weapons, and quality of life improvements over previous entries as well. Personally, I think the game's like shaping up really strong. Like I've on the record of being very on the fence with Borderlands games. The humor's never really spoken to me all that much. But I feel like it's mellowing out a little bit here. I think the new cast of characters kind of speak to me a bit more. And the quality of life improvements in terms of like that loot kind of grind just seems to be like a bit more approachable, perhaps. What about yourself, James? Borderlands 4, seeing a bit more of the game, is it speaking to you?
No, not really. I remember I played 3, I reviewed it, and I did get a bit of shit because I think I was one of the lowest scores. So I don't know. I'll probably
the wrong person to ask.
Yeah, I think at this stage, if there's like absolutely nothing else, I'll probably give it a shot. But it's not like something I'm like, you know,
dying
like,
for,
beating down the door for. Like it's not,
the metaphorical door.
Yeah, you're taking GTA 6 over it.
I mean, sure. It's I don't know. I just feel like this. I feel like Borderlands is in such a weird place where it came out and got big before, like, Destiny happened. And then Destiny happened, and that was kind of the same vibe, you know, like the millions of guns, but they just called it something else. And I think since then, that formula has been, like, kind of, I don't want to say perfected, but has been honed very heavily by, like, say, The Division and Destiny. So then when Borderlands 3 came out after all of that, I was like, well, what's different here besides like shit jokes and like unfunny humor? Do you know what I mean? Like, I just,
yeah,
I'm probably not going to play it either, but it did look better than I thought it
would.
The power ups and stuff look interesting enough to me.
All of the showing so far, it has looked better, both visually and from a gameplay perspective, but if that humor and the story is still the same, like, I'm just not interested. Like, it's not on my radar.
You've grown up.
I don't want to say that, because I don't want to be like, look down on people and be like, I'm a grown up and you're not, because you enjoy Borderlands, but I just don't find it funny. I find a lot of things funny.
It's a different brand of humor, very funny, and it speaks to some people, and it doesn't speak to others.
Yeah.
I think that's fair enough to say. I will say, having not played Borderlands 1, a bit of 2, more of 3, I do appreciate that this is a bit of a reset in the kind of story and the world of the game.
New planet as well.
I'm pleased that people can kind of jump into the franchise for the first time in 4, seemingly, and get a bit more out of it. It does make me question why they opted for the 4, but I guess that's just kind of more of a marketing decision more so than anything else. But it does kind of seem like this is the start of a new chapter in Borderlands and a nicer entry point. That is like working in the game's favor for me as well.
And everyone who like caught the movie last year and absolutely loved it, like they can be like, what's this all about? Because there'll be so many people like that.
I am surprised this is PlayStation marketed. This feels very like Xbox marketed game. Just
that seems like unnecessary shade. After all the positivity, like, we were just like,
I know. Yeah. It was just a random thought that I don't think I'd ever verbalize. I was shocked that it had like a dedicated say to play. Like, it just didn't
strike random.
Me as that game.
It's like that and Suicide Squad. It's like they're doing really well with their standalone state of plays. But we'll see. Yeah.
I mean, Borderlands gamers do typically sell well, right?
Do they?
And I guess
they must have, right, for them to do another one.
Yeah. I wonder how that deal works out. Do you think... Do you think
Wonderlands,
PlayStation are paying
sell?
$2,000 to, like, hey, do a state of play that's all about Borderlands 4?
I think
is that
so. $2,000
I
think
coming
it's like
to
a
PlayStation
marketing
saying, can we make this a state of play?
I don't think PlayStation.
I mean, I think
that.
There's money. I don't think they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart.
Just the charity
think, I feel like PlayStation would be taking the money in this instance.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. That console. It does more for Borderlands than it does PlayStation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, I have a rapid fire question for you both. At the end of the year, we sometimes talk about who has been the most successful publisher in the year, kind of based on their average Metacritic score. It's not dissimilar to what we're doing with Fantasy Critic and trying to pick the best games of the year. But obviously, in the real world, there are real publishers that put out these games and their scores are catalogued on Metacritic. So when all is said and done in 2025, which publisher do you think is going to have the average score of their games on Metacritic? Shannon, do you reckon you know the answer?
I'm going to have to back Nintendo. I mean, Mario Kart World, Donkey Kong Bonanza, Kirby Air Riders. That's my Fantasy Critic picks, and they're going to come through with 10s across the board.
Yeah. I feel like they were held back a little bit earlier in the year by a couple of releases. What am I forgetting?
I don't know.
Could be wrong.
I'm only looking forward.
You're thinking of last year.
Maybe I'm thinking of last year.
I don't know if they've had anything this year, which should work in their favor.
When was Princess Peach Showtime? Was that this year? Last year. Okay. Yeah, I'm getting confused then. James, what do you think? Nintendo or someone else?
Nintendo is a good pick, but I'm just going to go with the old faithful and say Capcom.
Do historically do well.
I don't think they're going to have a lot this year, but I think between Monster Hunter and then like all the remasters that seem to do really well, I think that they'll do well on the Metacritic front. So,
yeah. I'm tempted to say Bethesda this year. I have high hopes for Doom, the Dark Ages, and Elder Scrolls is in there as well. Yeah. So for the my gut is kind of all saying Nintendo, but for the sake of variety, I'll say Bethesda.
Starfield DLC.
Yeah,
if that exists. Surprise drop.
When is that coming to PlayStation? Do we think?
Avowed
is Bethesda, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
No,
it's pretty decent too.
Avowed is Bethesda.
Obsidian.
Bethesda,
aren't they?
No, it's not.
I don't think Obsidian is Bethesda.
Obsidian is not Bethesda. Sorry. Yeah, embarrassing. Microsoft. Let's go with that. Forza.
Yeah.
Who's even answering?
Oh, true. Actually, maybe Microsoft is there.
Oblivion. Yeah.
They kind of sit above everyone now, I guess. Yeah.
It's been a pretty good year so far. I think it will be a good year when it all shakes out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Speaking of good years, I'm having a bit of a blinder in what the wiki, the Press Start podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone has bagged themselves 2 points, unless you clean sweep and get a bonus third point, which is what I did the last time we all met. Leapfrogging Brody to go 2 points clear in the lead on 15 points. Brody's just behind on 13. James, you're on 9. Shannon, bring up the round 5. I did want to check that. Do those scores sound accurate? But because I've not been in the hosting chair and had show notes in front of me and stuff, I wasn't sure I was keeping across them.
You just saw you're on top and ran with it, did you?
Yeah. I will double check those numbers to be exactly sure, but let's run with them for the time being. We can fix them retroactively if we need. Contestants, if the two of you are ready, I have today's games prepared.
Let's
go. I've got to come through for you, don't I? This is a big one.
toe to toe. Yeah, for the girls.
Toe to toe.
Shannon, do me a favor here, and I've not really picked Shannon games to be honest, but
for the girls.
Fingers crossed. All right, game number one. Pay attention, Shannon.
I'm trying.
The game sees the player control a small motorized fishing boat. The game takes place on a James.
Is it Dredge?
It is Dredge.
Damn, well, I was going to say that. I thought that was too obvious.
I thought Shannon might have had a chance with that one. Damn it. All right. Game number two. Bit more of a difficult one, maybe. The game takes place in the 19th century at the dawn of the Industrial Age. Like other games in the franchise, the game is a city-building and strategy game. While it is set in the context of colonial trade, the featured architecture is Victorian era, and the economic engine is factory labor. The core gameplay of the game takes place in the old world, where the needs of the citizens, workers, and artisans are central to the management of production and supply chains.
James.
A parallel James.
Is this like fucking, is it Frostpunk?
No, it's not Frostpunk. Okay, good. No.
I'm kind of glad.
Good. That's Shannon.
Ugh. Is it annoying. Civ 7?
It's not Civ 7. No.
That's all I know. That's certainly.
A parallel New World city exists, which produces products that laborers in the old world want to purchase. Thus, trade routes need to be established. Unlike its colonial 18th century predecessor, the game has a blueprint feature that helps the player to plan out the city.
Shannon. Am I back in?
Yeah, you
can be back in. Is it Frostpunk 2?
No, it's not Frostpunk 2.
Is there a Frostpunk 2?
to give you a clue, you were nearer with your first guess. The game Frostpunk is a 1. City...
Shannon's...
You're welcome to guess that again, though, James, in case I've changed my mind. The game is a city-building real-time strategy
Shannon,
video game.
Shannon, tell me when I'm back.
Shannon.
Civ 6.
Not Civ 6, no. Developed by Ubisoft Blue Byte and published by Ubisoft and launched on April 16th, 2019.
Yes.
Shannon. Seventh...
James.
Hang on, I'm going to give James a go. Then we'll come back to you, Shannon.
No,
James?
You'll rue this day.
Give Shannon a go. Let him rue the day.
Okay, Shannon.
Anno 1776.
Yeah.
Is that even the game name?
I think you just mixed Fallout 76.
Yeah. it's not Anno 1776. No, Shannon. This could get fun.
It's not. It's James? Just that Anno 1707.
No. Not Anno 1707, whatever you said. It's an Anno game, yes.
Oh, see, this is annoying.
Okay, pay attention to my next... I'm asking
games.
You to, like, do a little bit of maths and history with this what the wiki, okay?
I'm not interested, doll. We're not here for that.
It's out of hours.
We're words people.
It is the seventh game in the series and returns to use a historical
James.
Setting.
Is it Anno 7?
It's not Anno 7, no. Following
James.
The previous...
You're out. Shut up. No, he doesn't just get to keep going.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. You're right, Shannon. I'm sorry. Following the previous futuristic titles taking place during the Industrial Revolution of the 19th century.
Anno 19.
Shannon.
Shannon.
Anno 1907 or 1906. 1900.
No, none of the above. James?
It's not that the, like, Anno Pax Fortuna,
no.
Whatever the...
No, yeah, you're in the know. Right vein with, like, a year.
Yeah, I know. It's just... I'm just not in... I've lost interest. Can we move on to another
I've game? Really got nothing more to read.
You said
I can
you had
move
four.
On. I've got another two.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got another two games.
See, you knew.
Are you abandoning hope with
this? I
feel
like James was never going to get Anno.
19th century.
That's incorrect.
Remember it
How's
works. So like,
going,
James.
Huh?
We're
James.
In the 21st century now, and everything starts with 2-0. Just work backwards a little bit.
James.
James.
Wait. I don't know. Anno 1801.
It's not 1801, no.
Can we just Shannon, move on?
Anno 1800.
This is it not... is Anno 1800. Oh, well done, Shannon.
There was no skill.
I was...
That's no, I always lose on them dumb ones where someone's like, no, and then it's like, and then it's like no. One letter off.
We'll get it right and you
suck
won't
my
lose.
Ass.
Yeah, we'll present it.
Anno 1800 is the correct answer. Well
is
done,
that
Shannon.
The new game?
No, that's Pax for Romana or something.
Oh, it
no.
is. Yeah, okay.
It's relevant for an undisclosed reason, though. Game number three.
No one cares.
There's a theme.
No one cares.
The game is set in the year 2095, where robillionaires have taken over the world and humans are addicted to dopamine. Jack Banhammer, a moderator hired by Peace Corp, set out to rescue the influencer from a skyscraper filled with killer robillionaires in exchange for a new pair of shoes. Players assume the role of a moderator, Jack Banhammer, who has 10 seconds to navigate each floor, with extra time awarded by killing enemies, consuming soda cans from destroyed vending machines, and performing finishing moves on foes with various items found in the environment.
James.
Upon death, James.
I don't. Is it Mullet Mad Jack Mullet or Mullet Mad Jack?
It is Mullet Mad Jack. Well done, James.
Wow.
He got the extra point, but Shannon, you kept him off the clean sweep, which
I didn't know.
I'm
we
very
grateful
for.
Just throw out four different names now and hope for the best. That's a new one.
Says the guy that rattled off like three
throughout
80
numbers.
On. Oh,
just
dear
take
me.
Your point.
So my reason behind picking each of those games was that they are all new additions to Xbox Game Pass, which I imagined we would spend a bit of today's show talking about. As we have a habit of doing here on the show. But yeah, well done, James. You've narrowed that gap between yourself and Brody. I think there's only a couple of points in that now. And Shannon moved off 5 points as well, where I think you've sat for a little while. So good to get an extra point on the board. With that, though, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Shannon.
Yeah, you can follow me at Shannon Grixty on everything.
And also joining us today, it was James.
Yes. I'm on Twitter at James, A-T-J-M-Z, and then elsewhere, if you want to find me. Make a fun
still
game.
Figuring out how to like abbreviate the
it's
blue
like
sky.
It's like jamsy.bsky.social. I looked it up, but I think, yeah.
No one's going to blue sky follow that, you. You can just ignore it.
Yeah.
Do look out for this bonus episode that we teased at the start as well. It's well worth a listen. But otherwise, until next week, happy gaming.
Good night.
Or
good morning.
Good afternoon.
And good luck.